This is 91.7 FM WHUS Storrs. I am Pedlin Ron, and you're listening to Bicycle Talk. It's October 4th, 2017. Welcome to Bicycle Talk this week with my co-host, Fran Storch.
Holla.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, please call or text at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you could visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you would like to contribute or to be on the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. So I'm going to start out with the traditional Ron's Rant of the Week. And this one is crazy people. Why crazy people? There are crazy people all over the world. Why are people so crazy? Be less crazy. You should get out and ride your bike. You'd be a lot less crazy. What am I talking about? Well, you know, we got the incidents that are happening around the world. We got the thing out in Las Vegas. It's very tragic. It's just a terrible thing. People should ride their bikes more. Be less crazy. I think so. And then the other crazy people thing is the people who are driving cars and trucks that are just so darned impatient that they don't have any tolerance for those of us who are trying to transport ourselves or be recreational or just generally be good for our environment. You know, we're just, you know, people should get out and ride their bikes more. Crazy people. That's my rant of the week. Another little rant. I have a few things on here. I just can't stay away from this. Puerto Rico. there's a rant for you. What's going on in Puerto Rico? Well, I happen to have some friends down in Puerto Rico who retired down there because it's an absolutely beautiful tropical island, and it's a great place to ride your bike and to go swimming and surfing and do all sorts of wonderful things because it's a tropical island. It's gorgeous. But right now it's not so gorgeous. And after 2 weeks worth of attempting to reach them because there is no power, there is no cell phone service, there is no phone service, period, they were somehow able to patch into me and get back to me on this. Why am I bringing this up on a bicycle talk show? I'll tell you why. Because you know what they're able to do? Because they're both fit and they're both active and they remained bicycle riders for their entire lives, they can get around just fine on their bicycles. So here we go. We've got this critical situation, okay? Power is out, and cars and trucks are not working because you can't fill them with fuel because you have to wait in a gas line for 3 to 5 days. And you can ride your bike. And so, you know, that's why Puerto Rico comes up. And so I put it in the rant column because it's I'm very disappointed with the United States' response to the Puerto Rican crisis. And knowing people who are there and who were able to actually communicate with me, I can tell you that what you're seeing and hearing on the media is sugar-coated big time. You have no idea what's really going on down there. So if you have any influence whatsoever, if you want to talk to your political connections, whatever it may be, bring up Puerto Rico. We need to take care of the folks in Puerto Rico. Really, really nice people live there, and it would be really nice to help them out. So, moving on. Next, we have on a positive side, which is going to go back and forth on this one. But I have a couple of things to bring up on a positive side, and one of those things is I'm going to bring up a group that I happen to be very directly connected to, the Friends of Mansfield Hollow State Park. If you live in northeastern Connecticut, if you ever went to the University of Connecticut, you would know about Mansfield Hollow State Park for various reasons. It is a 2,300-acre park that is located right here in the Storrs-Mansfield area. It's beautiful. There's a large lake. There's lots of trails. It's a great place to go with your mountain bike. It's a great place to go for a hike. It's just a beautiful spot. And the Friends of Mansfield Hollow are a group of people that are actually contributing both time and money to maintaining and keeping the park at its at its present condition, which is very well maintained at this time. So a shout out to the Friends of Mansfield Hollow State Park. And the reason I'm shouting out to them is because they are also hosting the cyclocross race, which is happening this weekend, this Saturday, at Mansfield Hollow State Park. So we would love to, we, the members of the community and also the Friends of Mansfield Hollow, would love to see you out there this weekend and come check it out. It's going to be a beautiful day, and you will see a very entertaining form of cycling called cyclocross, which you obviously know by now. If you've listened to me for a long time, I am mildly passionate about and have been very involved with for many, many years. So come on out to Mansfield Hollow, bring the family, and check it out. It's a lot of fun. We have a chicken. It's kind of a cool thing. We have a chicken. He walks around, rings a cowbell. Oh, yeah, and bring your cowbells. Another tradition of cyclocross racing is that it's a big deal to bring a very noisy cowbell and ring the bells when the riders go by, and it adds to the festivity of the whole operation. So bring your cowbells. If you don't have a cowbell, go check out your local garden/farm store, and you'll find that they usually have a supply of cowbells there for, yes, cows. So check out, get yourself a cowbell, come on down to Mansfield Hollow. The race time starts at 9 a.m. is the first race to go off. So we love spectators. It's a really cool thing. And come check out the Mansfield Hollow cyclocross race. Okay, moving on from that, I'm going to bring up something that is, it's something that I touched on last year. It was actually back in June of last year, and it's more than a year later, but I'm gonna state this one as Kalamazoo a year later. So Kalamazoo was a very tragic situation where there were 9 cyclists that were out for a bicycle ride, a very casual, nice, friendly bike ride, and someone who was very, very impaired mowed them over with a pickup truck and killing 5 of them and seriously injuring 4 of them. And so I was just kind of poking around through my information sources, and I was curious as to what was happening with, you know, the people who actually survived it. The people who survived it were Paul Douglas Goebel, Sheila Diane Jeske, Jennifer Lynn Johnson, and Paul Lewis Runnels. And they were all of that Kalamazoo, Richland area. And they have made it through, but let me tell you, they are not in, not without an awful lot of work on their part to get themselves back in shape, and also the doctors who also took care of them. The, they really got pretty beat up by that, but that's what happens when you get run over by a vehicle. So again, you know, if you're driving a vehicle, please be careful of the cyclists. If you are considering driving a vehicle and you are impaired in some way, consider throwing your keys into the lake and not driving that vehicle at that time. That's kind of extreme, but you know what? Don't get in your car if you can't operate the vehicle or even yourself before you get there. Please, please, please. These are human lives we're dealing with here. And on June 7th, 2016, if you're not aware of this or you can't remember this, the deadliest crash between an automobile and a group of cyclists in recent memory occurred in Kalamazoo, Michigan. The collision left 9 riders dead or seriously injured. The cyclists were part of a regular Tuesday night evening chain gang ride, is what they called themselves, which had been a constant in Kalamazoo cycling for more than a decade, and its members, mostly middle-aged and older, are known as very safe and conscientious riders. Many of their rides end with food, drinks, and laughs at the Bell's Brewery. And that's a kind of a classic, you know. As cyclists, we love to eat and drink. It's a kind of a nice thing because we have the, there's a couple of things go along with it. And that being that, first of all, you're very hungry when you get done with a bike ride. So you need to replenish. But it's kind of all part of the whole social interaction of cycling and cyclists, and we need our food, and we need to reload, so to speak, and we're burning a whole bunch of calories. So therefore, it's necessary to replenish. And so it's the people that I ride with, we're primarily social riders at this point. And I am still very tied into the racing scene, but I am not racing my bicycle anymore, although I know a lot of people who do, and I have over the years. But, you know, my real idea behind cycling right now is to be more of an advocate for cycling and do whatever I can to bring cycling to the limelight and let people know what it's all about, what you can do to make things better for cyclists. So anyway, the Kalamazoo folks, it's amazing. You know, one of the people that survived, Sheila Jeske, it was going to be her first ride of the year. She, at a last minute thing, she just showed up for the ride. She hadn't been on the ride for years. And then she ends up and going on this ride, and just a terrible things happened. But, they're going through a lot of anxiety still. They're going through a lot of, they're going through some very serious physical things too. So it's been rough. It's been a really rough thing. And I just want to bring this to light, because this is so important to understand that lives are very, very delicate. And when you're out there and you're driving a motorized vehicle on the road and you're coming upon some cyclists, just remember there's human beings on those bicycles. There are doctors, there are lawyers, there are all different aspects of life. Police officers, judges, a possible juror that might be trying you for doing something like this. Of course, hopefully they would not be allowed. They would be excused from that. But the point being that there are people out there that care for you. There are a lot of caregivers that are riding their bikes. And we ride our bikes because we love to ride our bikes. That's why we're out there. But there are also a number of us that ride our bikes for the health and fitness of it, because we're trying to keep ourselves in relatively good shape so we can continue being the good people that we are. So just remember, don't get so angry with us. We're just people that are out riding our bikes. I couldn't help but look up and see where this all is a year later, as far as the person who is involved here is his name was Charles Pickett Jr. And it still is Charles Pickett Jr. And according to the police reports, he had smoked pot that day at 5 p.m. He had also taken 16 to 20 Flexeril pills. You can tell me about that one, Fran. And also 10 Tramadol pills.
Oh, boy.
So obviously he was pretty impaired for the most part. And he'd also had a dispute with his girlfriend, telling her he'd be, quote unquote, better off dead before speeding away. Unfortunately, he survived this. I shouldn't say unfortunately, but he did survive this, and he left five other people better off dead, which was really a shame. The case is it's amazing. It's still pending. It still has not been tried. It keeps getting pushed out by the lawyers. The initial trial was scheduled to begin on April 25th, but in March, his attorney, Alan Koenig, filed a notice to use the insanity defense. Okay. He was court ordered to undergo an evaluation for criminal responsibility at the State Center for Forensic Psychiatry, and it led to a delay in the proceedings. Anyway, so Charles Pickett is still essentially I'm not going to say he's a free man, but he has not been brought to trial at this time, and they just keep pushing it off. And there's, it's going to get pushed off. A good lawyer will push it off as long as they can, because You know, time heals all wounds, and people tend to start forgetting about, you know, just how bad it was. And that's the way our justice system works in many cases. A little critical about that, but, you know, what can you say? That's the way our system works. And if you're on the other side of it, I suppose you would want it to work that way. But his attorney has requested to reverse the murder charges and also deny a request to suppress Pickett's statements to the police. Oh, God. We believe the decision will be upheld by the Michigan Court of Appeals, but respect that there is a process in place that has to be followed along, allowing for the defendant to challenge the decisions. So anyway, just a sad story. And why don't we have better laws? Why can't we do something more about this? Well, guess what? We can, and things are happening. And one of the things that's happening is that Kalamazoo is, they are actually, I have a list here of things that are going on. They have some new bike bills because of this incident, which is really kind of cool to see. So there has definitely been some action that has taken place. And as soon as I pull this page up, I can give you that information. But there are bills that have been inspired by this. And so what happened is, this is fairly recent, but the Senate Bill 123 and 170 require cars to observe a 5-foot passing zone for cyclists now. And this is in the Kalamazoo area is where this is. Not necessarily in the state, but in the Kalamazoo area. Senate Bill 124 requires driver training courses to include at least 1 hour of education on the laws pertaining to bicycles, motorcycles, and other vulnerable roadway users. Pay attention, other states. That's a big one right there. That's one I've been pushing really, really hard for around here. I would love to see at least 1 hour of education towards the laws pertaining to bicycles, motorcycles, pedestrians, whatever else, whoever else is out there using the roads for transportation. So let's take a good close look at that. If you are in another state and you're looking for something to push through, this is a good thing to push through. The Senate Bill 330 allows prosecutors to count a driver whose license has had expired or had been suspended in another state as having a suspended or revoked license when they are charged with the operation of a vehicle causing death while holding a suspended or revoked license or registration. So if you got your license suspended or revoked or somehow, you know, taken away from you in any manner whatsoever in another state, that can be used against you in the state of Michigan. So that's a good thing. That's definitely a good thing, because don't think you can just flee away from the state you're in and find that you can go back to your evil ways or whatever you want to call it and get away with it. That it will carry on with you from state to state. And then there's a Senate Bill 580 and 581, which expand the prohibition of texting while driving to include the use of a computer, tablet, camera, or other internet-based communication device and updating sentencing guidelines. Okay, little shout out here on this one. Other internet-based communication devices, yes, our cars are now coming with Wi-Fi. So if you're driving a car and you're using the Wi-Fi in the car, you are in violation of this particular bill that they're trying to put through. Hopefully all these bills will pass and everything will be fine. But Paul Goebel, who was one of the survivors of the crash, testified that what Michigan needed was a change in driving culture. Good point. He said he's seen a great deal of animosity towards bicyclists just for using the road, including people passing too close, too fast, or even running cyclists off the road. We need to affect the driving culture so that in that someone wouldn't even consider getting in the car and passing too close, Goebel said. He said he's been seeing the driving culture change before. When he was in high school, a lot of people didn't wear seatbelts until drivers' education set them straight. pointed out. Now almost everyone wears a seatbelt. With proper education, he's hopeful that drivers can learn to give bikes room too. This whole Senate hearing that they had for the bills, crash survivor Jennifer Johnson also testified in support of the bills, saying that Michigan was one of only seven states that hasn't enacted a law requiring drivers to pass bicyclists safely. That's the 3-foot rule that we have here in Connecticut, and many states have. Some have a 4-foot rule, some have a 5-foot rule. And the point is, you gotta wait until it's your time to pass, and then when you do pass, you have to give space to pass. It's pretty simple. So, actually, as I'm reading further down on this, I see the committee voted unanimously in favor of the bills. Next, they have to go to the full House for consideration. And that was fairly recent. So that's what came out of this. It's a sad day that tragedy like this has to be the catalyst for this. But it was, and it is, and so now hopefully Michigan will be a much safer state for you to ride your bike in. My big issue here, and I know I bounce back and forth on rants here, it's TLVs, I call them. This is a new term. Feel free to share this term. I think it is far more fitting than some of the other ways that we identify vehicles out on the road. I call them TLVs because I refer them to being truck-like vehicles. Since we've had this enormous increase, and I think it really kind of started back in around the mid-90s when these things started hitting the road, but since we've had an increase in TLVs or truck-like vehicles, the roads are not as safe for pedestrians and cyclists as they used to be. These vehicles require more attention to drive. They are much larger than the motor vehicle that maybe you had been driving before this, and they're very hard spatially to understand where you're at, so much so that you're finding a lot of these vehicles are now being, with the newer vehicles, are now being outfitted with cameras because people can't see. They can't see when they're backing out of their driveways. They can't see when they're driving over their little kids. I mean, it's really tragic what has happened since people have started driving TLVs versus regular cars. And I'm just saying, say no to TLV. If you can find a way around it, find a way around it. I drive what they call a compact wagon, and it is, I'll tell you exactly what it is. I drive a Volkswagen, and it is a Volkswagen Golf wagon, and it comfortably seats 5 people, including the driver, and it has cargo space in the back of it. And if you put a bike rack on the roof, you can carry 4 or 5 bicycles on your roof too. So there's no excuse for having to drive something larger because you need more space for that sort of thing. So you, look at responsible vehicle. Next time you're looking for a car, look at a responsible vehicle. Let's look at maybe like paring it down a little bit. I noticed that the car manufacturers have now started promoting things called crossover vehicles, which are kind of sort of a cross between an all-wheel drive TLV and maybe something that somewhat resembles a car. Still not exactly where I'd like to see it, but, you know, it's at least a little bit of a help, and maybe it puts a smaller profile on the road as far as the footprint goes and the amount of space that's being taken up by these things. But really, seriously consider it. TLVs, not good for us, not good for anyone. It really, it is a problem. I understand if you are a parent who has a number of kids and a number of neighbors' kids that you're driving off to the ball game or to the park or wherever it is that you're going to transport lots of people. I get that. I understand the need for a larger vehicle to do that sort of thing. But, you know, think about it. It doesn't have to be so large that you have a very difficult time navigating this vehicle down the road. So, you know, just be careful out there. Please be careful. I worry about all my cycling friends. I worry about myself when I'm out there. And I worry about the effects that it would have on you, the driver of your TLV when you do physical damage to someone. I mean, it's going to hurt you too. Believe me, it will. You will feel that. So anyway, this all came off of the Kalamazoo, and a year after Kalamazoo, or actually a year and a number of months after Kalamazoo. So I just really wanted to touch base on this and remind us that, you know, there's a lot of vulnerability out there when we're riding our bikes, and we want to be real careful. It's going to be a lot of people on the roads right now because we are here in this phenomenon in New England called fall or autumn, however you want to look at it. But it's also foliage time. And those of us who live in this area refer to it as leaf peeper season. And leaf peeper season is a riskier time of year for some of us who are riding bicycles because of the fact that there are a lot of people that are driving around in their vehicles, their motorized vehicles, and they may not be paying complete attention to things other than the beautiful fall foliage, which is very pretty. It is truly that. But, you know, if you need to really take a look at it, pull over, stop, look. That's good. Don't wander side to side looking for, you know, the prettier view one way or the other. Just please pay attention. And if you stop and look, I mean, there's some places, boy, you go over to Bog Lane right now. When the leaves are changing, you look down over the valley and over the ponds and the stone walls and all the colors. It's awe-inspiring. It is really beautiful to see that sort of thing. And so, you know, you should get out and check that out. Better yet, ride your bike. Get out there and ride your bike and check it out. The rail trails are very popular this time of year as the foliage changes. And it's just you're riding through tunnels of what used to be green tunnels, and now they're very colorful and beautiful. So get out and ride your bike. Check it out. That's what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about bike riding. And, you know, you need to get out there and experience it. We've had amazing weather, just truly amazing weather. Way warmer than I can remember it being. Is that global warming? Well, we won't touch on that one right now. But what it is it's very comfortable to get out and ride your bike still. There, we have some cool mornings, but the days warm up fairly rapidly. And we've had incredibly dry weather for the most part, which is going to continue into the weekend. Which brings me to the weekend, which this Saturday at Mansfield Hollow State Park, we are having a cyclocross race. The Mansfield Hollow cyclocross race, just for a little history here, was originally started by the owner of Rainbow Cycle Sport in Willimantic, Connecticut. And that owner of Rainbow Cycle Sport was me and your good old friend, Peddlin' Ron, who was looking for a way to... I needed something to do. You see, if you own a bike shop, and you'll appreciate this if you're in the cold climates, if you're in California or one of those places that just stays beautiful all year round, you have no real true idea about how this all works. But because you're not seasonal, so therefore you have the luxury of having really nice weather almost all the time. So you never really have to get off your bike. But here in New England and places like, well, we'll go over to Michigan since we were talking about them earlier. We're in the snow belt. We're in the cold zone. So we're in the place where the light tends to get to be a little bit less because the sun is moving further and further away from us. We are getting a... Yes, Fran?
I went for a ride on Monday, and I went out. I got out at like 4 o'clock, mm-hmm. and I was riding along, and I could see my shadow. And boy, was I tall.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like that with the previous week when I was riding in Florida.
Well, yeah, right, because you were further south.
Way further south.
So there you go. So how did it feel to be really tall?
It's, well...
Being someone who's horizontally challenged.
It's a mixed bag, because I look at that shadow, and I look at it and go, all right, I'm out late in the day. And usually if I get out late in the day, I'm sort of... dragging a little bit, which I was, but when I see the shadow and it's that, like, it's two or three times as high, as tall as I am, it makes me sad, because it's like, whoa, the sun is very low in the sky, and, you know, I know we're losing light rapidly at either end of the day. Yeah, so we're in that downslide of losing minutes at the end of the day. And so it's getting dark earlier and earlier. It's getting light later and later. And I'm feeling it. I'm starting to feel that sleepy autumn sensation.
You should try to get up in the morning for a 5:45 spin class at the local community center.
Yeah. Well,
talk about darkness.
I know. But before too long, you're going to be teaching your Tuesday and Thursday spin classes. So
it's all true.
Yeah. So I'll probably show up to some of those.
So anyway, but there's still some great riding. There's still some great riding out there. It's really, really nice. And
this is
really
the time of year I like to start to pull out the old gravel grinder and hit the rail trail.
Yeah, it's a good time for that. And
yeah.
And you know, hey, speaking of which, going to bounce here a little bit, but so I'm coming back from Hartford this past week. And as I've been watching this project going on the, I think it's the north side of Route 384, as you're going out of Bolton Notch and into Hartford, and there's been a lot of construction on the side of the road. And what's happening is there is a connection being made from the Charter Oak Trail to the Hop River Trail. Now, the Hop River Trail is a completely dirt trail. It basically goes from Willimantic, Connecticut, all the way up into Vernon and to Manchester. It branches off in two different directions up there. And it goes through this incredibly beautiful place called Bolton Notch, which is, there's big ledges there. And the rail line, when it was cut through there, it was quite a feat of engineering when they put the rail line through. So if you've never been there, it's certainly worth checking out because it's just beautiful coming through there. And you are at a high point when you go through Bolton Notch. Even though you've only been climbing on a 2% grade to get there, you're definitely at a high point. So either direction that you leave Bolton Notch, you go downhill. You actually go slightly downhill. So that part's kind of nice. But anyway, as I'm driving out, I'm noticing all this construction on the side of the road, and I noted with that construction that it's the rail trail that they're working on, and they're connecting it, and they've been at it diligently every day and doing a lot of hard work on it. I don't always come back that way on 384. The other day, I started coming back that way, and when I did, I happened to notice that on the opposite side of 384, right on up to the exit for Route 85 in Bolton, it's done. It's paved. It's they were putting up, I actually took the exit the other day just to take a look at it and see what it looked like. And they're actually putting the fencing up at that time. It's really amazing what they're doing to connect this. And it looks like they're on a let's get this done before winter kind of project. So very cool stuff. You will be able to ride from Eastern Connecticut all the way to Hartford, almost always on trail. Little shout out to Pratt and Whitney on this one. They are the we have a little problem getting across their property. We'd love it if they would understand that cyclists are people too, and many of their engineers ride bicycles, and this would be a great way for them to get to work. But there is a little blockage going on there at Pratt and Whitney Aircraft, and it would be really nice if they could see it in their best interest to allow that trail to be finished through their property, because it does go right into East Hartford, and you can get pretty much all the way out to Main Street in East Hartford now, which is a big improvement. So really cool thing. Rail trails are great. Rail trails are wonderful this time of year. Other bike trails are wonderful also. We love to see them. We love to see more of them. I think they get more people out on bikes and make cycling a much more doable effort if you have a safe place to do it. So we like seeing that. If you haven't had a chance to get out there and check that out, you should definitely check it out. And of course, there's our own very favorite Airline Trail, which goes very close to our house, which is quite long if you take it from one end all the way to the other end of mostly finished dirt rail trail. But that's where it's really beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. It's a great spot.
Did they do anything with the Hampton section, the bumpy Hampton section?
Not done yet.
No.
I'm hoping to get some feedback on that this weekend, because I will be talking to someone from the state who might have some additional information as to if that project is ever going to get completed, because it would be really nice, because it's a little bumpy when you go through the Goodwin Forest. It's a little bit bumpy. It's still worth going there because it is just so beautiful. That's once you get north of the Goodwin, I just think that whole area up there is just spectacular. And some of the stonework that's on the side of the rail trail that was done years and years ago, the cut stone that they put up, it's really like a really beautiful feat of engineering. And, you know, you can imagine what it might have been like back in those days. But, yeah, get out, ride a rail trail, have some fun, you know, enjoy fall. Slow down. It's okay. You know, it's a good time of year to just kind of chill and slow down and get yourself ready for the fall and winter times. And then, you know, you can work on your game plan from the first year from that point on. But get out and ride your bike always. That's my big thing. Just get out and ride your bike. So anyway, let's see. Did I hit everything I wanted to hit there? This is an interesting thing that I found. And this is from Cycling Weekly, which I believe is a British production. And, anyway, this was from April 14th and I just stumbled across it, and it was the 10 types of riders you'll see on every club ride. And Fran, I think you're going to find some amusement in some of this, because there, it has a certain amount of relevance to what we see with our cycling club and other cycling clubs that we've been involved with. And it says here, the cycling club, a place where all types of riders come together on a Sunday and enjoy a relaxing ride in the company of their fellow bike lovers. And it's likely you'll encounter at least one of these every week. Okay, you ready? Number one, the Navigator. All right. Traditionally, that role falls on a veteran member of the club, seeing how they've ridden every one of the routes at least 200 times.
That's you.
That would be me. Even with the advent of GPS devices, there's probably a designated set of ride leaders to take on map duties who can be divided into two categories, willing and reluctant. Mm-hmm. Either way, they're essential, mostly because they know where the cafe is.
I'm somewhere between willing and reluctant.
Yeah, you're pretty willing. You've led a lot of rides. You're pretty good.
It's okay.
Yeah. Well, I will say you're more on the willing side than the reluctant side, because I think you've led more rides than a lot of people that I know who are more just wanting to go on the ride.
Right.
So I'm going to give you more of a willing than reluctant on that.
All right.
Number two. Are you ready? Do you have this on your screen? The reason Fran is laughing is because this is a laughable moment here. The Strava addict. Okay. The Strava addict is...
you have to explain what Strava is.
Okay,
Strava is
this electronic information system. It's an app, right. And you can hook yourself up to it through your smartphone or your Garmin or other GPS device that you may have, and you can connect your information with their information. And if you make friends on Strava, yes, it is mildly Facebook oriented, kind of.
So what Strava does is it's a GPS app, and it records your ride and records the speed of your ride, and people can, and when you do your ride, not only does it record it, but you have the ability to make something called segments. And so you can choose a stretch of road. You can give it a cool name. Like, for example, when I'm down Florida, there's a segment in, I think it's on the rail trail. Here he comes, here comes Speed Racer. No, it's on Manasota Key. Here he comes, here comes Speed Racer. So you can give it silly names like that. You can give it like just a name from Laurel to Bay, which tells you the streets that it connects,
right.
Which that's a segment down in Venice or down in, you know, Comas, Florida. Or you know, you can give it a goofy name.
Right.
Like, you know, coffee with four E's.
Right. Right.
Anyway, see, so it's a segment. And then when you ride the segment, you get ranked as to how fast you complete the segment.
Right.
And you can see yourself ranked alongside of everyone else who has ridden that segment. So once the segment is in there, if you ride it, you're tracked riding that segment. And then your name will appear in a list, and you'll be ranked as to how fast you rode it. There is a setting where you can hide from the segment. You don't have to record yourself in the segment. But The thing about Strava is that people, first of all, people obsess about recording their ride. The ride has to record. Like, if you didn't Strava it, did it really? And Strava is a verb.
Right, right, right.
Did you Strava it? If you didn't Strava, did it really happen?
Yeah, did the ride actually really occur?
And then the other thing is that people get really competitive
about
crushing the segments. And you'll be on a group ride, and all of a sudden someone will take off, and it's because there's a Strava segment ahead that they want to
And they're
race
launching
on.
To try to beat their last the time record. There or their friend's best time there or whatever it is.
Because Strava gives you, it tells you whether you're the fastest person on that segment, and it will also give you a record of your own PRs, your own personal records.
And if it's for yourself, very nice. I appreciate that. But if you're just out there to beat your friends, do I have a little trouble with that? Maybe. Maybe a little. Go buy a license. Put a number on your back. Go out and do it like the right way.
And yet some people like to do Strava segments. The upside of that, I have to admit that. So I don't usually run Strava. I usually run Fit Digits iCardio, and I do that because it's I love the app. I love the feel of the app, and quite frankly, it's less expensive than running Strava Premium.
Right.
So I record my workouts, and the readouts on Fit Digits iCardio are, I think they're just great. So when I'm training, I use iCardio, but if I'm on a non-training week, I will use Strava just to record the ride so I have a record of the calories and then I went. So what I did when I was in Florida, I didn't bring my heart rate monitor. That's the other thing. I don't use Premium and I don't use the heart rate monitor. When I was in Florida, I actually went ahead and it will tell you when a segment is coming up. And then you can, for some of the segments, it will actually time you. You can see a timer going on your screen for that segment. So I said, for a few of these segments, I'm going to actually try to, make a record. So I made a bunch of PRs on the record, and it was very interesting. And the cool thing was, I wasn't trying to beat anybody. I didn't care who I was faster than or whatever. I was just trying to sort of, see how fast I could go on the segments. And every time a segment came up, I would try to crush it. So I did interval training, and it was another way to do interval training.
Yeah, so if you're looking for a way to motivate yourself and to work on your training, then I think it's a good thing. Now, that there's a love it or hate it situation with Strava.
Sure.
And when Strava first came out, I went on to Strava because it was unique. It was nobody else had anything like that before this, and so I went on to Strava and I played around with it, and it was okay. It was kind of fun, and then I started noticing people that were going out and you can actually apply a segment on the ride, so they were making a particular point from A to B on the ride a segment, and then people were out trying to compete with one another. Now, Here's the reason why my cycling industry had a big blow up about Strava when it first came out. And it is because there were people, and basically it wasn't just on the road, this was also on mountain bikes, that were so intent on beating a segment that they were risking other people's lives. And there were people on trails that would run off of trails because the mountain biker was flying down the trail trying to beat a Strava segment. There were people that were blowing through stoplights and stop signs because they were trying to beat the Strava segment that a friend of theirs had put on the road, and they were trying to beat that out. And so shortly after that came out, and a lot of let's say trolling went back and forth on the internet about it, I discontinued my activity on Strava because I wasn't real happy about it. Before I left, though, because I wanted to because I wanted to make a point, I went out to all the segments that my quote unquote friends were beating me at, and I basically pedaled out as slow as I could, and when I got to the segment, I nailed it like a time trial. And
people
And I beat every single one of them, and then I shut myself off.
Oh.
Just to make a point. So if you're If you have a little Strava rage, that's kind of a fun way to do it. Just, you know, save up for a big day and then go out there and just give it your 110% on that segment. And I think there's people that do this already.
Yeah, there are.
And it's like, you know, what is the point? What is the point? I don't get it. Anyway, I do note that there are a number of people that are Strava people that are bike racers that I know, and that's fine. And I also will note that there are a handful of people that are bike racers that are commanding the king of mountain, you know, the highest level of the segment, and they are bike racers that finish last. Just a note. Just a note. That's all. Okay. So moving on. Strava.
I have a Strava friend in India.
That's very nice. I'm sure you both ride on the same roads.
No.
So to the rest of Strava lovers, you're only cheating yourself by riding in the slipstream before going hell for leather on a designated segment. So to the rest of your club mates, you're the guy who's constantly jumping off the front and ramping up the pace, much to the annoyance of those just looking for a jovial morning spin. Save it for the solo rides. Moving on from the Strava addict. The next one we have, number three on this list, is the wheel sucker. Okay, a wheel sucker. Is that a positive thing? Is that a negative thing? Somebody once told me that being called a wheel sucker was an offensive term.
Yeah.
And I understand that someone could take offense in that because where do I go? But we all suck wheels on bike rides, okay? We all do it because if you're sitting behind someone else's wheel, they are working harder than you are, so therefore you are gaining benefit from it. If you are also contributing to that ride by coming around that person because you've had adequate rest and you're getting out in front and you're letting them suck your wheel, then a wheel sucker is not such a bad thing. But if you haven't paid anything, this isn't a free ride, okay? So the wheel sucker that gets out and hops on a wheel in a group ride or whatever and never comes up and contributes and then goes for the town line sprint or goes to beat everyone back to the parking lot at the end, I have no patience for.
I've had that happen. I've been a ride leader and been working hard to keep the ride together.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have people come around me in the last mile and nail it and like to get to the parking lot first.
So you're breaking a major bicycle etiquette here. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. And so anyway, we're gonna move on. The wheel sucker actually has very little explanation here because I think someone didn't want to touch on this one in this particular article. The number four is the cafe hunter. That would be Fran.
Yeah.
Fran is the cafe hunter. She loves to stop at the cafe and, you know, get a little drink of something and maybe a little snack. And the cycling club, this is the cycling club equivalent of kids in the back of the car repeating, "Are we there yet?"
I don't do that. I just like a bike, a ride that has a cool cafe in it. I don't go, "Are we there yet?"
Oh, but I do have people that are saying, how far further is it until we get to the cafe? Now,
yeah.
That's not always for the cafe's goods that they're giving out.
It's
sometimes
for
it's for the facility that they also offer.
Mm-hmm.
But asking every 5 kilometers at the cafe up the road is the stop can get really grinding. Coffee, funny. But there's always the potential that they're so happy when they finally reach it that they'll buy you, it says here, a flapjack.
Are British, but they're pouring tea.
Are pouring tea, yes. Okay, here's one of my personal favorites. Next one is number 5. And this one it annoys me to no end. I am not the only one annoyed by this. I have people who have ways of dealing with people like this. It is called the half wheeler.
Okay.
So here we go. Yeah. I found this and I just started laughing and I went, "Oh my God, I could do a whole show on this." And I'm going to have to be careful because I'm going to run out of time here. The half wheeler. What is a half wheeler? A half wheeler is the person who rides up alongside of you. Okay. And you're having a conversation with them or whatever, and you're just riding along and they creep about a half of a wheel length ahead of you. Okay, when you are trying to have this nice conversation, and so in order to meet that person, you just pedal a little bit harder and you creep back up and you put your wheel side by side with their wheel, or what I like to call handlebar to handlebar. Okay, handlebar to handlebar is a very, very safe way to ride. There's a reason why it's a safe way to ride. If you happen to get too close to the other person and you're handlebar to handlebar, you can very easily just tap and lean into one another and separate yourself. If you are half wheeling, you could get caught behind their handlebar, or they could get caught behind yours, and the outcome is not positive. You will end up in a pile on the road. So half wheeling is extremely dangerous. So we don't like the half wheelers. If you've ridden with Ron, then you will find that if you start half wheeling me too much, I will grab onto your jersey and I will pull you back, or I'll grab onto your shoulder and I'll pull you back, and I will make you ride handlebar to handlebar with me, or I will tell you to go to the back of the pack because I don't want to deal with that.
When somebody half wheels me, I half wheel them in the other direction, and if they keep doing it, then I just let them go.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It becomes this back and forth thing. It's a competitive thing is what it is. It's an insecurity thing, and it's a competitive thing.
Yeah.
And it goes back and forth. And anyway, so it says here that not too distant cousin of the Strava addict. This is the one. This is rule one in the book of no-nos during club rides, and it won't make you very popular with the people floundering off the back. Clubs generally hold dedicated training sessions for those looking to race, so keep a lid on it until then. All right, so that's your half-wheeler. My friend Dave Geiser, who if you're listening, Dave, big shout-out to Dave, and thank you for volunteering, taking the day off on Friday to help me set up the course also. Dave did a really funny thing to someone one day who was just annoying the daylights out of him. And it was kind of in the early days when some of us had bib shorts and some of us didn't. And this particular character was half-wheeling Dave a lot and just being generally annoying to him. He was just getting very, very impatient with it. So Dave decided the last time that this guy did this, he rolled up alongside of him and he grabbed onto the back of his shorts and he pulled them down and he put them completely around the seat pack on the back of the bike and then pinched him on his bare buttocks and made him jump out of the saddle, which then put his shorts down over his knees, and it was a funny moment. But yeah. I don't know if Dave will remember that. I keep telling Dave stories from the past, and he doesn't seem to remember them as well as I do. But that was a very funny day.
He probably needs vitamin E.
Okay. There you go. Okay, number six is the never enough rider. Okay. Yeah, we know this guy too, or girl.
Yeah.
Or girl.
Girl.
But we've only done 130 kilometers. They may or may not also turn up at the start and talk about having ridden 60K to get there. Okay, they're the ones who just can't seem to get enough miles.
The randonneur. And they're
more concerned about their miles than they are about the ride that they're going on with you. So anyway, we'll move on that one. That's a sensitive subject. The mechanic. Okay, the mechanic likes to show their inner tube changing speed on any wheel going as you.
That's you.
And you might as well let
That's
them.
You.
As also
That's you.
Enjoy passing on their infinite wisdom about how.
That's Ron.
You're using the wrong gears.
That's you.
You could be a bit more efficient in your pedaling and what your next
Ron.
Wheel upgrade should be. Okay, guilty as charged. Yes, I am the mechanic. I've always been the mechanic. It's my dad was a mechanic. It's in my blood. What
we
am
call
I supposed
you the
to
bike
do with
whisperer.
This? I am the bike whisperer. Yeah. And but you know, every club has that person. This is a very interesting thing because every club has this person. It's really interesting. Now, number eight is legs. Simply bare legs, whatever the weather. Hello, Peter. A boxing day ride is no place for your pale, uncovered pins. Explain this Boxing Day.
Boxing Day is December 26th.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's the day after Christmas in Britain and British countries. And it's called Boxing Day because it's when your boss gives you your Christmas box, which is your bonus.
So, Mr. Leeds, if you're listening, that's you.
Yes.
Number 10, The Hard Man, just because riding in a 54, 42 chain.
You didn't do the Always Late Rider.
Oh, did I miss the old? Oh, the Always Late Rider. That would be me, too. I have that problem, too. Try to get there. You know, it really, you want the ride to start at 8:45, and it really starts at 9, 6 cents for lateness. We'll probably leave you waiting until 9:20. Oof, The Hard Man. I got to go through these quickly because we're about ready to quit here. The Hard Man, just because you're riding a 54 by 42 chain set around South Downs, wherever that may be, it doesn't make you a world champion. So anyway, those are some interesting things that I found and I thought I would share with you because I found them very, very amusing. And I want to just bring up a couple more things here before I sign off. Just so you know, we are through with the Rocky Hill weekly cyclocross races, which is very nice. Thank you to CCAP for doing those. KMC CrossFest is over. Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross is coming up this Saturday, October 7th at Mansfield Hollow. Please come down. Ring your cowbells. I will be out there all day Friday setting up, and the course will be open by 3 o'clock
in the afternoon
if you wish to go for a pre-ride. The Great River Ride is on Sunday, October 8th, up in Massachusetts. The Grand Prix of Gloucester Cross is October 14th and 15th. Big, big, big time cross race here in New England. Biggest one in New England. The Central Buck County's Club's Covered Bridges Ride from our friend who listens down there is coming up on the 15th of October. And remember all the other Connecticut series of cross races, which this weekend, Mansfield Hollow on October 7th, Brody Cross in New Hartford on October 21st, Belltown Cross October 22nd in East Hampton, Cheshire Cross November 4th in Cheshire, Connecticut, Newtown Team 26 Cross November 5th, March Farms Cross in Bethlehem November 24th, and Elm City Cross finishing up the Connecticut season on December 17th in New Haven. Please check it out. It's cool. It's cross season. My name is Pedlin Ron. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. You can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you would like to contribute or to be a part of the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedlin Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.